8:03, welcome into The Drive. Time to save money at the pump. Text Dave to 83835 now to save a quarter gallon on your second fill-up and even more down the road. Now, this week, listeners can win a pair of tickets to see a Kings game at Golden 1 Center. Keep tuning in to KHDK. Also, later in the program, we're going to give away John Mellencamp. It still sounds weird. John Cougar Mellencamp. I know he doesn't call himself that anymore, but he'll be at Ironstone Amphitheater June 17th. We got a pair of tickets for you. Coming up in about 5 minutes, Jim Peterson, Wolves Television, will come on to talk about Minnesota versus Sacramento tonight. And, well, let's see. Here we go. Couple of things for you. Couple of notes. Number one, make sure you check out KHDK.com. Katie and I both have articles up there we want you to look at. Katie, you wrote about Candace Wiggins, WNBA, and all the crazy stuff going on there with that story.
Yeah, basically talking about the jealousy and bullying in the WNBA because she was straight and pretty.
Well, so there's that.
And it does suck to be that.
To be what, straight and pretty? It sounds like a musical, right?
You know. You know the struggle, right, Nate?
Also, I wrote an article closing the book and moving on from the DeMarcus Cousins trade. Both those up at khtk.com. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Mitch, in New Jersey, you're on The Drive. Hello, Mitch. Do we have Mitch? Yeah? No? All right, Mitch. Sorry, buddy. We'll put you back on hold. Last night, if you were under a rock, you may have heard this at the end of the Oscars. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway were handed the wrong envelope, Price Waterhouse. And last night is maybe the first Oscars I ever remember where you didn't see. And if it was on, I missed it. I didn't watch the whole telecast. But usually they have the guys walk out and says, Price Waterhouse.
Yeah,
they
didn't have it last night.
Well, hey, what do you know? They've taken blame for handing the wrong envelope. Warren Beatty, I think a lot of us thought he was being old and weird and funny when he was extra pausing. Turned out he knew something was wrong. And then Faye Dunaway read off.
She went for it, man.
She saw La La Land on the paper and she went for it. But here, let's talk about the craziest part about this, maybe, is that Moonlight, it cost
it was like $1.5 million
to make it, and they won Best Picture, so that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We'll give them credit
for
that.
Good job, everybody.
And I haven't seen that movie yet. I really, really want to. The only one I saw was Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, or as you said to me yesterday, Manchester United.
Yeah, because we were right. Yeah.
We had Katie and I had a date night last night. Send your
it
letters
was
here.
Not last
or
night,
Saturday
it was the
night
before.
And we were trying to decide on what movie to watch. I got to pick. It was that movie Passengers with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
Is that any good?
Let me tell you something.
I liked it. It was good.
Hold on. What do you think it's about? Based on,
I've read about it.
Oh, you have read about it. Okay, so I saw the previews. And I thought
it's about Chris Pratt being kind of a creepy, weird guy.
See, I thought they were in space, and for some reason they're trapped in space.
He
and
thought
then,
it was going to be this thriller, and it's
yes,
like a thriller
like
slash love story.
And crazy stuff going on the ship, and like maybe some haunted stuff and paranormal or whatever. Like that's what it led me to believe. Maybe I was off base. It's a stupid love story.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
I know. That's why, like, you see the trailers, it tells you one thing, and then...
Yes.
Actually, so Dave said the same thing. The trailer was deceiving, he said. So after we watched the movie, we watched the trailer, and I'm like, everything you needed to know about the movie was in the trailer.
If you watch the movie and then see the trailer, you're like, oh, okay, now I understand that. But the trailer, to me, led me to believe there's explosions and crazy stuff, and she's trapped in this giant bubble of water, and this bartender guy looks really freaky, like Jack Nicholson in The Shining when he was at the bar. I thought it was Matt?
It was a great movie.
Oh, of course you thought it was a great movie.
I read that it was like Chris Pratt's desperate attempt to get laid without any humanity around.
Space Titanic.
Kind of.
Oh, my God.
You know, kind of. I'll give you this.
Oh, my God.
It was a little bit. And, oh, by the way, just because this is what people care about, shower scenes, Chris Pratt 1, Jennifer Lawrence 0.
He was so upset. He's like, it is completely unfair that they show Chris Pratt's butt in the shower,
like,
and not once do we get to see Jennifer Lawrence.
Of exploiting gender stereotypes.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when she got hacked.
Oh,
I thought you were going to say they did a good enough job of showing her butt there.
Yeah,
but
we've all seen that.
Man. I haven't. I won't look at it.
Right.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about. So
anyway, I don't know. I'm sorry. I give that the world famous Carmichael Day 3 out of 10. And it probably is a 7 out of 10, but I thought it was something else.
You were hoodwinked.
I was hoodwinked. Meanwhile, Katie's over there. I actually thought it was a good
movie.
I mean,
are we worried about spoiler alerts? Because I want to see if I can basically get this right here without having seen the
okay.
movie.
Okay. I will answer a yes or no. Yeah, I don't want to screw it up for anyone else.
Okay, so basically
it's not The Sixth Sense.
But. Yeah. They're all kind of in, you know, whatever. They're supposed to be cryogenically sleeping because they're on, like, a trip to Mars?
They're
or
on
like
a
some...
trip to a new colony.
Okay.
Yeah.
To recolonize the Earth. And it's supposed to be hundreds of years or something ridiculous like that.
He wakes up early. And he's got, I think, 100 and something, 120 years to go. And
no,
there's 30 years into the trip.
It's 120 years to get there. Uh-huh. And he wakes up with 90 years left in the journey.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, he's so desperate and selfish that he chooses the prettiest woman that's also there and breaks her pod too so that he can try to get a piece and eventually
so
like explains to her what he did and somehow she still falls for him.
There are a lot of things
like,
in
when there's just two people left in existence, you get a pass.
He killed both of them.
She actually used the line, "You murdered me."
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right, that's all.
So there are some explanations
just
in between
so he
the
could
cracks.
Get a piece.
Nathan, you essentially described it perfectly.
No, he didn't.
Yes,
I can't believe Katie's like the one that's going, "Well, come on, that's not totally it."
He got lonely for a year and he decided, you know what, I'm lonely.
Lonely, he was going crazy.
Okay, well,
Dave,
whatever.
You would go crazy
in a
period of 3 days.
I'm the guy.
So
who...
I would assume that the prettiest one on that she's mine now.
I mean, I don't know that she was the prettiest one, but the assumption is she's certainly fine to look at.
She belongs to him now, though, right? I mean, he's dead.
God.
There's no one else there.
Why are we talking about this?
What, Matt?
Nate would have just been happy with a robotic bartender.
Yeah, he would.
Perhaps.
He probably would have.
But Nate, to your point, and I guess we'll screw the movie up for everybody, so turn down your radio if you don't, you know, spoiler alert here on Passengers. But yeah, he wakes her up, lies to her about it, and then at one point when he's about to propose to her or something, he says to the bartender, this robot bartender is the only one to know the secret, and he's sworn to secrecy. But then at one point he goes, "Oh, there's no secrets between her and I."
And of course, because he's a robot. He thinks that means.
So the robot narcs him off. And then she does various things. Like at one point, she sneaks into his bedroom and just beats the hell out of him, like literally with fists and kicking and stuff. Like, and says, "You killed me. You murdered me." And then, like in the middle of the whole thing, Lawrence Fishburne wakes up for about an hour, and then he dies because he has organ failure.
Jesus.
What? And it turns out that she would have woken up anyways. That because there was like massive failure within this giant spaceship, so she forgives. That's why she forgives him, because she would have woken up anyways. And then they live the rest of the journey. I don't care. And then I'm spoiling it. Then they live the rest of the journey. Like, and they decide not to go back to sleep. They just live the rest of the journey.
I still encourage people to watch it because Dave's synopsis of this. There's so many things that he's wrong about. And you know,
okay, Jim Peterson's on.
You know why? Because he's on his phone about 75% of the thing. So he's taking in about 25% of what's
Peterson
going on.
Jim Peterson is on hold, and
thank
we're going
goodness.
To talk to him about the basketball. But when we get done with that,
we won't.
Then you're going to tell me what I'm wrong about. Because I'm nailing it like a freaking piece of wood.
Yeah,
the
movie's problematic.
Movie sucks.
Jeez.
Jim Peterson does Minnesota Timberwolves television, and they are taking on your Sacramento Kings this evening. Jim Peterson, also former Sacramento King. God, if I remember correctly, came over in the Ralph Sampson trade, I believe. Jim, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. How are you?
No, it's not. What did I walk into? What kind of conversation?
Seriously.
I've done a lot of radio interviews.
I know.
And usually I can decipher what's going on before I come on. What is going on here with you three?
It's like our audience. They have no idea. We're talking about the movie Passengers with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. If you've seen it, you get it.
I have not, no.
Yeah, don't waste your... It's a dumb love story. I thought it was aliens and shooting and stuff. It's not, so... Jim, didn't you come
over
to Samson?
I was in the Otis Thorpe trade with Roddy McRae.
That's right. I'm an idiot.
There you go.
I'm an idiot. That's right. Well, see, I tried to be smart, Jim, and as always, I failed. Yeah. How are things? Your Timberwolves, let me ask you this. Around Minnesota land, I've adopted the T-Wolves like 3 straight years because I think this is where it's at. They're so unbelievably young and talented. As far as fans go, are they fulfilling expectations? Are we happy where they're at, or are people kind of freaking out a bit?
I think that they're kind of freaking out a little bit. I think that I don't know what they expected Well, I do know what they expected. They were expecting contending for that eighth and final playoff spot. And they are, in a sense, just that the bottom of the Western Conference has not been as good as it normally is. But, you know, I think they really thought that with Tom Thibodeau coming in, that defensively we'd be much better than we are. You know, I think that 23rd in the NBA in defensive rating, I don't think that they expected that. I think that they looked at Tom Thibodeau's track record in Chicago, and he took that team that Vinny Del Negro had, and then he made it into an elite defensive team. But it's not really apples to apples, because if you look at that team that Tibbs inherited in Chicago, he inherited Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose, Taj Gibson. You know, I mean, like, you're talking about like excellent defensive players already, and they were 41-41 when he got there, and they were already a playoff team. So it's not apples to apples. Tibbs inherited a roster of super young guys. You know, Andrew Wiggins, Karl-Anthony Towns, Zach LaVine, when the season started, were all under, 22 years of age. So Andrew just turned 22 on the 23rd. And so Carl is, still young, and Zach's still young. But, defensively, they just can't get it done. And the Wolves probably could easily have, every team could probably say this, Wolves could easily have 12 more wins if they just could have executed and had a few more veteran leaders on their team to get it done. And, you know, Katie, you sat there and watched the Kings dump games too in kind of the same way. But, the Kings have lost a lot of close games this year. But I just think that everybody kind of felt like we'd be better defensively, and that just hasn't happened.
Jim, isn't it amazing how a coach can have a reputation for a style like Tibbs with defense? Mike Malone, same thing. You look at Denver right now and what their defense looks like. You look at your guys' defense. It's funny how personnel factors into these things, right? It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, well, think about what Chicago had when Tibbs came to Chicago. I mean, like, it really makes a huge difference. I mean, Joakim Noah is one of the better defensive-minded centers. They were veteran guys. Somebody as simple as Kurt Thomas. Okay, Kurt Thomas was on that Chicago team when Tibbs first got there. Kurt Thomas was a 14-year veteran who was one of the better pick-and-roll defenders that you could have. In terms of communication and understanding and seeing scenarios on the floor, that Kurt Thomas could come in as a bench player and with your second unit and could hold things down for you. We just don't have that. We just don't have any veteran leaders. We have Cole Aldridge coming off the bench. And Cole's fine, but Cole can't score. Chris Dunn has been somewhat of a disappointment. Chris Dunn is he came into the league as a 22-year-old rookie. We had a game this year where it was Wiggins, Towns, LaVine, Tyus Jones, and Chris Dunn on the floor. We beat the Clippers this year in L.A. on TNT. And get this, Chris Dunn, our rookie, was the oldest player on the floor.
Ooh. Wow.
Chris has been somewhat of a disappointment. So, Rubio has gotten better at shooting the basketball, but he's still not a great pick-and-roll point guard because he can't manipulate the defense the way you need to be able to be successful, to hit the roller, to hit, to make the defense react, to be able to hit three-point shooters when they rise up from the corner to the slot. Chris Dunn has not been able to make shots consistently. We just don't have that point guard offensively that can bend defenses to your will, and then we just have not been able to get stops enough to win close games.
And, Jimmy, keep bringing up the defense, too. So there's that factor. You got Chris Dunn being a little bit disappointing. I mean, is that kind of the big stuff? Or how, you look at Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins specifically, how is the development of those two coming along? Is that in a spot where you think it should be?
Andrew has been off the charts. He currently, right now, our last game against Houston, Andrew just broke a franchise record of consecutive 20-point-plus scoring nights. Wow. Kevin Garnett had the record. Andrew just broke Kevin Garnett's record. And so that kind of shows you the consistency of Andrew Wiggins. Karl-Anthony Towns just had 37 points in the game. He's been phenomenal. Towns he's really developed into a dominant low-post scorer. He's had games of 47-41. He's got two 40-point games. Andrew has four 40-point games this year. Towns has had a bunch of 30-point scoring nights. He, he's not quite as good as DeMarcus Cousins in terms of just completely dominating defenses down there in the low box, but he's right there with DC and Anthony Davis. And so, like, those three guys, I think, are, in my mind, the best centers in the league. And Towns is, you know, still 21 years of age. He's gonna grow into it. So Towns has been great. And the interesting thing is that both of their numbers have skyrocketed since Zach LaVine has gone down. So since Zach LaVine hurt his knee in Detroit over a month ago, Towns and Wiggins, their production's gone way up. Their shooting percentages have gone way up. And, you know, kind of the metrics, this was one of the things that we kind of noticed during the season, that Andrew Wiggins suffered when Zach LaVine was on the floor. You know, just shooting percentage-wise, they just didn't coexist well all the time. So not that we're worse off without Zach LaVine. We aren't. We obviously, Zach LaVine going down was a huge thing for this team. And tearing your ACL is just the worst injury, because it means, you know, it's anywhere from six to 12 months recovery, depending. So I just have to say, Andrew has become a top 20 talent, maybe. I think that defensively, and here's the thing, that, you know, one of the knocks against Rudy Gay was that Rudy, you know, didn't bring it every night, and that Rudy could do other things, but he didn't always do all the intangible things. And so Andrew doesn't give you high assists. Andrew doesn't give you high rebounds. And so I think at 6'8" and being so incredibly athletic, Andrew really needs to rebound this position better in order to be an elite level, top 15, top 10 talent. But he has the ability to be. He is unguardable. And he scores so effortlessly. And so that's Andrew's Andrew's legacy is going to be whatever he makes it. And you know, he could be Scottie Pippen, or he could be Rudy Gay. And Rudy Gay's a great player, don't get me wrong. But, you know, Rudy's not everything he could be given the skill sets that he has.
Jim Peterson joining us, Kings T-Wolves, tonight, 7:30, right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Jim, help me solve an argument I've been having with Kings fans for a long time. Ricky Rubio it's almost like what we were dealing with DeMarcus Cousins. It seems like he's available at every single deadline, but he never goes anywhere. And one of the knocks I consistently hear on Rubio, and I think a lot of this has to do with him being a Euro player, is that he can't play defense. And then I yell at everybody that, you know, he's not Gary Payton, but this is a guy who's one of the more underrated defenders in the league and is very active defensively. Am I overrating that and looking at numbers too much, or is Rubio a good defender?
No, Rubio's a good defender. Rubio is a disruptive defender. He has problems guarding certain types of point guards. He has very difficult problems trying to contain smaller, quicker point guards. Like in years past, he's had a really hard time containing Ty Lawson.
Yeah,
he's had a really hard time trying to contain guys like Isaiah Thomas. So those smaller, quicker point guards, especially if you stick Ricky in a ton of ball screens and the screeners happen to be excellent screeners, like if you get a piece of Rubio, sometimes he has difficulty getting over the top or underneath. And Katie, you know what that means in terms of a big trying to contain that.
Yeah.
If you've always got a point guard coming downhill at you all the time because your guard can't get through a screen, it really you know, puts your defense at a disadvantage. So those scenarios are scenarios that Rubio can struggle sometimes. But when it comes to hawking the ball or being a weak side defender where he understands passing lanes and he gets a ton of deflections, and he for the most part, unless it's a bad matchup, Ricky can be very disruptive on the ball as well. So your assessment is correct. He really is a good defender, and he's a plus defender, and he's a great help defender, and he's a great teammate. He's a great leader. Ricky, there's so much to like about Ricky's game. He gets so much shade thrown at him because he has problems shooting perimeter jump shots, but he's such a maestro in terms of running and organizing your offense. He's one of my favorite all-time players with the Timberwolves. I've been with the Wolves for 19 years, and Ricky just is he's never had the personnel around him that he's needed to be successful. The Wolves have not had dominant or just dynamic three-point shooters around him. Ricky needs to have shooters and athletes around him. And you know, there's, you know, obviously Wiggins and Levine and Towns have helped that, but they're so young, they don't know how to win. So Rubio's barely been a victim of, you know, early on, David Kahn, the kind of, you know, personnel, you know, decisions that David, we could have had Steph Curry.
Yeah.
We picked Johnny Flynn. You know what I mean? Like, there's just the personnel decisions that David Kahn made when Rubio first was drafted, put rookie behind the eight ball, and really haven't accentuated the kind of player he could be.
Jim Peterson, former King, and does the analyst role for the Timberwolves, joining us this morning on KHTK. Now, there is a lot of changes, obviously, with this roster for the Sacramento Kings, and no longer do we get to see this matchup between these two teams as DeMarcus Cousins versus Karl Anthony Towns. We're now in a situation where there is not a single guy on this Kings roster, Jim, that you can call your go-to scorer. What are the advantages and disadvantages for the Timberwolves when they face that?
Well, we just saw that, Katie, with with the Dallas Mavericks. You know, they've got you know, Darren Williams was waived, and they've got a bunch of injuries, and you know, they trotted out a lineup that was very difficult for them to match up with Minnesota. Dirk Nowitzki and you know, Harrison Barnes playing the four and five. You know, Rick Carlisle's playing Harrison Barnes at the four. And Harrison Barnes offers, you know, from a defensive standpoint against your defense, he offers up problems because he can take people in isolation. He can, you know, beat you off the dribble, but he can't guard Karl Anthony Towns. And so you're seeing some of these lineups that are different. You know, I'm sure Dirk looks around and goes, you know, who are these guys and who am I even playing with right now? You know, and I think it's kind of similar in Sacramento. I mean, Dirk's still kind of a go-to, but he's, you know, he's not the same player he was, obviously. And I think in Sacramento, you're kind of looking at trying to figure out a roster combination or a lineup combination that can be successful. And you know, I'm a big Dave Joerger fan. He, you know, Dave Joerger is probably the perfect coach for this team right now because of his CBA and D-League background. The CBA was a league that you would have a revolving door of players, and you didn't even know who would be on your team from day to day. And so Dave Joerger has the ability to not sit there and worry about, you know, who's there. He just is going to take the guys that he has, and he's going to coach them up.
I'm so glad that you said that, Jim, because I've been trying to tell people he has this reputation for not wanting to play young guys, not being able to develop it. I'm like, that's all he's had in the NBA, but look at what he's done before. He's used to this.
He's absolutely used to it. He's going to be positive. He's going to try to put guys in a successful situation. Hey, Dave Joerger is a Minnesota homeboy for me. I know him. I know what he's, and you know, Flip Saunders and I used to talk about this all the time because, you know, Flip, before he came into the NBA, was a CBA coach. And Flip used to talk about this all the time. And then he used to talk about what a great coach Dave Joerger was and his ability. Because when you're I'm telling you, when you're a CBA coach, you just don't know what's going to be happening from day to day. Guys are getting called up the NBA. Guys are getting traded. Guys are going to Europe. Your roster's always being shifted and changed, and you've got to stay positive, and you've got to come up with a game plan that can help this group of players that are going to be on the floor tonight win. And so that's what I really admire about Dave Joerger. He's in a tough situation. You know, I get it. I understand what's happened with the Sacramento team. I've been in the NBA since 1984. I played for the Kings. I know this market. I know your broadcast team. Grant Napier was doing games when I played here, for crying out loud. That's how old that dude is. I mean, he's been here for a long time. And Jerry Reynolds was my coach, you know. So I know this organization. I know this team, and I know some of the problems that DeMarcus Cousins put on this franchise from a chemistry standpoint. I get it. You know what I mean? So like, these things needed to happen. I can't believe how many negative things are being said about Vlade Divac and the deal that went down. And I, you know, trust me, there weren't a lot of teams out there that wanted to bring on DeMarcus Cousins. As good as he is, he's the best center in the league, and teams did not want to touch him because of the radioactive way that he interacts and can do things to your locker room. So it's tragic. It's a tragic situation. It really is. It makes me sad for Sacramento Kings fans, who are, you know, arguably the best fans in the league. You know, when you come here, when it's great, these Kings fans are amazing, and they deserve better. And I think Vlade will will do his best to make this a better situation, but it was just very difficult.
Jim, always good to have you back in Sacramento. Once a king, always a king. Good luck on the call tonight. We always appreciate your time.
Hey, I appreciate it, too. Hey, Katie, I want to tell you, too, I read your Candace Wiggins article. You did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Jim. Yeah,
one of the things I did, too, I've been coaching in the WNBA for 8 years. I coached Maya Moore in Minnesota. We've won 3 championships, and Candace Wiggins was on our team. I don't know if you guys have gone through that topic, Katie, but your article was fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care, Jim.
Okay.
Have a great call, buddy.
Okay, guys.
Thank you. Yep. All right, that's Jim Peterson. Fantastic stuff from him, but we're way late for a break. When we get back, Lonzo Ball's dad is getting loose. More athlete dads gone wild. And Katie's going to tell me what I got wrong about the movie Passengers. That's 5 minutes from now on The Drive.
I'm not.
Sports 1140. That's because I'm right. Sports 1140 KHDK. Valid question from the texters. Is Matt George hanging in there after the crushing defeat of Mona at the Oscars?
Moana. The
clouds are a little bit darker today.
Yeah. Would you say it was better than?
It's better than Frozen.
Better than Frozen. You're smoking Moana if you think it's better than Frozen.
It easily is better than Frozen.
Come on. Didn't Frozen win an Oscar, though? Not that that's the...
Idina Menzel did.
The ticker tape there. Dean, you're on The Drive. Hello, Dean.
David.
Deanel.
Hey, Tom.
Hey there.
Nate
Dean!
Dog.
What's up, man?
What's up? It's Monday. And,
hey, thank you, Dean.
I just wanted to say I'm excited about the Kings, and thank God it's baseball season. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that Scotland beat Wales this weekend in rugby in the Six Nations tournament. So
long national nightmare is over, Dean.
That's it, buddy. Hadn't beaten them in like 10 years, so it was impressive.
Let me tell you, and those Wales, they're heavy.
They are, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick. I heard a rumor that Mr. Cousins got another technical. Is that true?
Uh-huh. It took
him like 45 seconds.
32, I think. Double technical yesterday with Steven Adams. I don't know. That one's 50-50 on being rescinded. They get a little goofy when it goes to suspension, so we'll see. But it was interesting. What did he finish with yesterday? Through 2.5 quarters, he and Anthony Davis, I know this, had combined for 50 points. It was a good game with Oklahoma City till the end, but he finished Cousins with 31 points and 10 rebounds in 21 minutes, becoming the first NBA player in history to put up those numbers in that little time. It doesn't matter. They're 0-3 now. You can understand a loss to the Thunder, but losing to the Dallas Mavericks was a little bit goofy.
Yeah, but if you look at their box score, both the big men have scored half their points in all 3 games, I think.
Yeah, Davis and Cousins combined for 69 points last night,
nice.
As a matter of fact. Yeah, hey now. Rob Gronkowski's favorite box score, 69 points, 17 boards.
Let's face it, that's the only box score.
They're doing fine. The Cousins and Davis thing is working out just dandy-o, and it's not even like they're shooting a poor percentage. Well, obviously it's not. They're 0-3, but you can tell this is a situation where the Pelicans traded away anything they had, and for this thing to work, they're going to have to surround them with a few players, Dean.
Well, that was my other last question is, he has that one more year in his deal?
Yes.
Is that the thing? So he can't go anywhere unless somebody trades for him?
He can't go anywhere this summer unless they trade for him. No, he's signed through next season.
Okay. Well, hey, great point about Coach Yeager with the young guys on the Kings. I'm kind of excited with the young guys. I like the way they're playing and they're hustling. And, you know, that's kind of – I wasn't a fan of Cousins. I wasn't a hater. I just thought, you know, he gave us 6 years. It wasn't working. I think it was time to do something. But I think Coach, we have the right coach. He's used to working with a revolving door of players. And the young guys, there seems to be a skip at everybody's step a little bit right now. So let's hope it goes well.
Thank you, Dean. Appreciate you. 339-1140. We'll try Mitch in New Jersey one more time since he's been holding so long. Mitch, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing? Good morning.
Good.
Great. First with the Pelicans. It just seems to me they're always looking. Adams is a dirty player. I would think I would give Cousins the benefit of the doubt because Adams is always looking to start dirty. And it was so obvious. I mean, how much can they do things to Cousins to get him going?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. And with the Kings, I mean, I saw that Cauley Stein had a great game, and Michael Moore at the first game after the Cousins trade, and now they slide by. I don't understand. it's like a seesaw with these guys. They can't be. I mean, you figure these players want to be starting and put up numbers. They get their chance to start.
You don't go from being someone that can go 5 or 6 games without playing and playing 10, 15 minutes in chunks to being someone that plays 35 minutes and knows how to make that transition easily. There's going to be a transition phase for this whole team, Willie included.
I think it is interesting, though, and thank you. Is that Mitch's theme music right there?
It's a Sopranos
theme. Yeah, okay, there we go. Here's the thing. It was a little weird. I understand that, hey, if you thought Willie Cauley-Stein was going to go 29-10 every night after Thursday, you probably thought wrong.
Bad bet.
But, God, you go from 29-10 to 0-5 in 28 minutes and 2 points. That was a little
more inconsistent.
There was
a scouting report on him this time.
Well, God dang, that's a really good scouting report. I mean, Jesus, that isn't a tremendous scouting report. 29-2?
Like, if a guy goes for 29 points, how many different ways did he do it? You say, hey, let's not let this guy get to the rim.
But on Thursday, was the entire Nuggets team, like, distracted by a bumblebee?
Yeah, I think so.
I get
Mike Malone looks great with a beard, by the way.
He really does. I get that you have scouting reports. I get that you go, okay, here's what he did here, now let's shut this down. I totally get it, but
just to be
like,
completely useless.
Right.
Yeah,
from one game to the other. Dear Lord. It'll be interesting to see what happens tonight. And Ben McLemore.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just, because this seems really relevant to our last two callers. You guys, we don't have to care about DeMarcus Cousins anymore.
I know.
We don't.
He's
gone. It's okay.
It's interesting how the clocks. The calls, I should say, are kind of petering out. I understand there's going to still be some lingering interest, but...
Well, I mean, and I'm talking strictly as far as
we just
whether
don't have
it's
to.
Working in New Orleans. Who cares? He's gone.
Well, here's my...
As long as they're 0-3, if they keep losing...
Yeah, I mean, Kings fans do have a vested interest as to whether or not it's working out in New Orleans.
Just because of the pick.
Yeah,
But, I mean, like, if we're going to sit here and break down, like, oh, well, it looks like those two are working, they need some help around, do we really need to rehash the last 6.5 years, and just do it in New Orleans now?
I've got one word for you. I don't know if it counts as a word. It's more numbers. 2002, Nate.
That's two words. That's four numbers.
Well, it's one,
okay.
You know.
2002.
If you're doing a word count
words.
On your computer and you do 2002, it technically counts as one word.
Text the one word, score. That's one word, score, to 44-11-40 for a chance to win tickets to see the Kings at Golden 1 Center. Text score, S-C-O-R-E, to 44-11-40 right now. And win a pair of tickets to see the Sacramento Kings. Let's see how many people screw up the word score to 44-11-40. We'll tell you next and get into Lonzo Ball's dad. Hey now. Right here on The Drive, back in 3 minutes. Sports 1140 KHTK. And applause is for the studio audience here and all of you out there. Let's see. We've got almost all scores that were texted in. Well done. We have a couple of comedians in there spelling score wrong, and somebody texted in sorry. But that could have been for just really about anything. Nate Goodyear's in the other room now.
Hi, I've made the transition.
Because, hey.
Well, hold on. Wait a minute.
Yeah, right. Matt George is gone to a dentist appointment.
What a loser.
Well, seriously.
What kind of adult goes to the dentist?
You have the whole, right? You have the whole rest of the day for your dentist appointments. What are you, Katie Christensen? Jeez.
What are you
amateur.
Talking
Even
about?
She,
I've never missed the show.
That's my point. Katie, on Friday, we had the Jiffy. By the way, thanks to Jiffy Lube. We haven't said that yet. Thanks so much to Jiffy Lube for letting us hang out and change your oil and do all kinds of other hijinks. We were down at the Carmichael store from 3 to 6. Katie had a dentist appointment on Friday, and she sandwiched it between the show and the Jiffy Lube. And she's a major star locally.
She was there on time.
She was there on time. You weren't.
I was not.
No, you weren't. That's fine. It's 8:48. I'm saying that's fine. I don't know if they feel that way.
Well.
Dock it from your pay. 8:48. Time to save money at the pump. Text Dave to 83835 now and save 25 cents a gallon on your second fill up. Hey, also, go ahead and call in right now if you got the Bearco moment of the game. If you can remember the Bearco moment of the game from Saturday, and there was one despite the loss, call in and you could win fun and prizes from Bearco and the Sacramento Kings. We'll give away John Mellencamp tickets here in just a couple of moments, so stick around for that. Guys, LaVar Ball is the father of why?
I always think you're going to say LeVar Burton, and every time I read
like
this,
Jordy.
I'm reading Rainbow, but you know, proceed.
No, LeVar Ball. Oh, you really? That's where you go, LeVar Burton is reading Rainbow. Not Roots.
Oh Lord.
Well,
not Jordy LaForge.
Well, I mean, you got I got Reading Rainbow long before I was exposed to Star Trek or Roots.
Okay. I mean, I would put Reading Rainbow third on the list of LeVar Burton accomplishments, but that's me.
Well, no, but I mean, you got to think about, like, Reading Rainbow was hot when I was in, like, first, second grade, something like that. That's
I
what
understand.
We got.
LeVar Ball, no relation, as far as we know, to LeVar Burton. He is the father and is related to Lonzo Ball, who is expected to go rather high in this year's NBA draft. And boy, has he never shied away from a microphone. In an interview on the Kevin and Mike show, it's a great show in Arizona. Kevin and Mike listen all the time, 1290 AM. K-Cub, LeVar Ball said his son has one destination in mind. Quote, my son will only play for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah.
This is what's so awesome about this is I love when guys' fathers and mothers get loose on stuff like this. I hate to break it to LeVar, but that's not how the draft works. You don't say, I'll only play for XYZ team or teams. That's not how it works. And it's like, okay, he goes on to say.
He coughed? Wow. He coughed.
Are you okay?
It's so funny. No. He goes on to say, I want him to be a Laker. He's going to be the first one that's homegrown. And trust me, he'll do the same thing he's doing at UCLA. I'm not trying to say he won't play for a different team, but I'd like him to play for the Lakers because it's home. And I'd love him to learn from Magic. He's the best guard ever to me. And nobody better to teach him than Magic Johnson. I'm like, what's wrong with this dude? But it gets worse, Dave.
What?
It gets worse. How does
it get worse?
He said.
How's that? Oh, you're handing me the baton back? Is that what we're doing here?
Yeah. Do you want me to take it?
Yeah. You took the baton and then you
worse,
just give it back
Nate,
to me. Yeah. Why?
What is going
because
on?
He goes on to say that his son is better than Steph Curry. And he says, trust me. He goes,
well, when Steph was 19.
But this is what he said. Put Steph on UCLA's team right now and put my son on Golden State and you'll see.
Oh, thanks a lot,
see
Dad.
See what?
See that he's better?
See that? No.
Hey, well, the best part is him walking it back and being like, well, I wasn't saying that's the only place it would play. He was trying to do some Oprah Winfrey storyboard, what's it, The Secret type of crap.
Yeah,
if
he's
you
putting
say
it in
it,
the
then
universe.
It might be so.
Yeah.
Now, if you're Lonzo Ball's dad, and I'm not going to give him this type of credit for being this smart, but the Lakers are projected, and the key word there is projected, to have the number 3 pick in the draft. Now, depending on what mock draft you look at, most of the ones I've seen have some combination of Markel Fultz from Washington going number 1, likely to Boston with the Brooklyn Nets pick. Number 2 is the Suns. Number 3 would be the Lakers. And most have Lonzo Ball going number 2 to the Suns. And then Josh Jackson of Kansas going number 3 to the Lakers. So what you wonder now is, does this make Phoenix a little shaky on drafting Lonzo Ball?
Please.
And maybe letting him drop down to the Lakers or
letting him. I'm sorry. If you have the first, second, you take the best player available when you have those.
Generally, you do. Generally, you do. But then you get into an Eli, and I know it's a different sport, but you get into an Eli Manning situation or a John Elway situation, depending on how the family is involved. If you're the Suns, do you call Magic Johnson, Nate, and do you say, okay, guess what? If that's the way it ends up going, if it ends up going Boston 1, Phoenix 2, LA 3, if you're the Suns, do you call the Lakers and say, hey, why don't you throw in this and we'll swap picks?
I mean, absolutely. As much as, you kind of want to, like, harp on people, like, this isn't the way the draft works. Well, I mean, if you can dictate the terms of the draft, I think you'd do it. Like, to me, drafts are kind of stupid as it is anyway, because how are these guys not have some sort of free market vying for their services when instead, like, you pull them right out of college or whatever it is and you say, this is where you're playing, this is how much you're making when you do it. Like, that's nonsense and to me kind of anti-American, but that's a whole,
you're saying there's oh Christ
I think drafts
you're saying there shouldn't be a draft.
I think drafts are bogus in general, but if you're going to do it, I have no problem with someone saying, this is where I want to be, and you know, if you can, if you
nobody else did,
if
why
you
should
are
he?
In a position,
what makes him so special?
because he has the ability to do it. He's got the talent, just like Eli Manning, just like John Elway. If you have the ability and the talent to dictate your spot or your landing location in the draft, more power to you, brother. That's what I say.
If I'm a dad and I want my kid to play for the Lakers, I get it. I want my kid to stay at home. I mean, my kids are going to be going to college here in 8 years. I'm going to be a huge Sac State, UC Davis fan.
So fast forward to when Mason is in college playing basketball, and he's projected to be a top three lottery
pick. He's playing
pick.
For one team.
See,
but the good
you
news
are that
is,
tool.
But the good news is when my son in 9 years or 10 years is eligible to come out of college, odds are the Kings will have the number one pick in the draft, so
that
won't be a problem.
I feel so bad for Lonzo Ball in this situation because this poor guy is already going to have to deal with a ton of attention, and he's a kid and all this stuff, and he's playing college basketball right now. Let's say it for what it is. It's college basketball. It's not even close to the NBA. I would like my dad to just shut his mouth and let me play and quit making things. It's not even a problem he has to deal with yet, but now it is. Now his dad's made it a problem. He was asked about it, and he's like, hey, man, I'm just here to play basketball. Good job, Lonzo. At least you know how to keep your mouth shut.
Not for nothing, but if that Laker pick falls out of the top three, it goes to the Sixers, who are projected to currently have the number four pick in the draft. Yeah. So there's that. The Sixers are kind of well set up. Speaking of parents gone wild, yes, Nate?
Just how many guys over the last, say, let's call it 6 or 7 years. We'll call it 8 years, just to be fair.
Let's call it 8.
Have decided that they weren't going to... They didn't want to work out in Sacramento because they weren't going to play here.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Most
you know
of
what
them.
We're forgetting here is how many parents kind of start doing this and the internet trolling. Are we forgetting about Yorgos Papianis's dad like trolling Dragon Bender during the draft last year? Oh my God. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
I think not ready for NBA.
This is you talking or him?
This is a quote. This is a quote from his tweet.
Gotcha.
Quote: I think not ready for NBA.
So he's talking about his son, right?
He's talking about Dragon Bender. This is very soft player. So because it seemed he did not play World Championship under 19 and Europe Championship under 18 are
his
fears.
Yeah,
what I'm not. I'm reading
that's
it.
I know that's what he wrote.
That I'm no. I'm reading it word for word.
I know that. I'm saying just.
Do I have an accent coming out that I don't know about?
You're reading it in his accent because you're reading it verbatim, and I'm saying
it's not an accent. I'm just reading it word for word.
Clean it up.
Okay, so I mean, I don't want to misquote him though.
No.
Basically, he's calling Dragon Bender a soft player and
Chub.
That he's scared. And he went on to say that his son is not a second round pick. He's a lottery pick for sure. And well, he was taken as a lottery pick.
Yeah, I guess. Where is Dragon? Why am I not finding Dragon?
How did you spell Dragon?
No, I'm on the. Am I stupid? He's on the Celtics. He's on the Suns. I'm being an
idiot.
Yeah,
he's on the Suns.
Why am I thinking he's on the Celtics? Jesus, Dave.
They all start with a S.
No, here's what I want to see here. Dragon Bender on the Suns has played in. Oh, he's played in 38 games.
Yeah,
much
really?
More than Yorgos Papianis. So scoreboard, Dragon Bender.
Mm.
Hey, shut up, Papianis's dad. Because guess what? Dragon Bender has played in 38 games for a contender.
Dragon Bender, not just an anime anymore.
Thank you very much. Not a verb. Not an action. Dragon Bender, the real deal. And let me tell you something. He's blowing it up. 3.2 points and 2 boards a game. So there you go. Our thanks to Jim Peterson and Matt George, who's getting drilled right now at the dentist. 339-1140 gets John Mellencamp tickets. If you're the 11th caller, June 17th at Ironstone Amphitheater, more at KHDK.com. For Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen, I'm Carmichael Dave. Jim Rome is next. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.